As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that it's a me, Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays, or available to download later in your podcast feed. Unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks!
Patrons get those perks! I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and each week we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And please welcome our guest this week. We believe she's the future. We believe her story will make us want to talk movies, but a podcast is just a podcast. It's Alice!
Woo! Until somebody starts speaking into a mic. Just had to finish the line.
That's right. A microphone is just a microphone.
Until someone starts. I will say, when that happened, I was like, that's a good line. No wonder they used it.
My mic. I want to talk into my mic. Is that the... No. No, that's not it. All right. We've got Air, which we're kind of referencing right now. And then we've got Super Mario Brothers movie that we will chat about on this one as well. How are you, Alice? It's just you and me today. How are things going? How's life?
I know. Yeah, it's good. It's good. Like, life is finally calming down a little bit. It's why I haven't been on in a while. You know, had a big Europe trip and then came back and I was like, why don't I change everything and get a new job? And then things just, and all of a sudden it's, you know, almost May or it's April, mm-hmm. but you know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh, the year's already almost like, we're getting halfway. What's going on? Mm-hmm. Ah, life. So, but otherwise it's perfectly fine.
Well, it's absolutely wonderful to have you back on the show. Mm-hmm. We have missed you immensely. Always good to hear your voice and your opinions mm-hmm. on pop culture. What was your favorite part of your Europe trip? You only get to pick one.
I think the thing I've been saying is when we went to Pompeii. So we finished our trip in Italy. For those of you who don't know, I'm Italian. This was me bringing my partner home for the first time to visit my family in Florence. And then we went around Italy and a little bit of France. We finished in Rome. And while we were there, I was like, well, I've always been obsessed with ancient history. He loves Pompeii. We need to go on a day trip. And it had the worst weather. It was like the hardest rain you've ever seen. It was so intense. My partner's umbrella got completely broken. But on the plus side, because of that, there was basically no one in the entirety of pay. And so we kind of had the place to ourselves. And, you know, the rain was coming in spurts. So we were like, we've traveled here from Australia. We are staying. We can't reschedule this. And it was fascinating. Like, I've obviously learned about it a lot, but I didn't realize how modern of a society, like, it was before it got, you know, evaporated by you know, the volcano. But, like, for example, they had takeaway shops. They were very modern in their thinking around, you know, like, sexuality and also just politics. But also they had, like, sliding doors, like, to shut up shop. And you could still see the grates. They invented sidewalks. They also had, like, the first wood fire oven. And it was just... it was bizarre because it's not, you know, you think all this like 2,000 year old stuff is going to be cordoned off and you can't touch, it's not, you can all touch everything. And it was just bizarre. It's absolutely bizarre. And they haven't even finished uncovering it all. So I loved it. It was so fascinating. And then obviously, you know, it was really like, I don't know what the word is, but it was just very intense to see, you know, the people who have been kind of re-put together with the cast and stuff and see them in their final moments. And we saw a horse and all the, you know, bits that were found as well, like all the different like pieces of pottery and stuff. And yeah, I was just, oh, it was so fascinating. If you can make your way to Pompeii and book, like we did like a 2-hour guided tour and then we just kind of explored ourselves for the rest of the day, can recommend for sure.
I thought you were going to say when it was pouring rain that it was okay because at least you weren't covered in ash. I thought that's where you were headed.
But yes.
Sounds amazing. I do hope to get to Europe someday. That'll be a lot of fun. But for today, I am not going to Europe, but I might go to the Mushroom Kingdom.
Oh, dear.
Let's go ahead and get into it. Let's talk about the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Mamma mia.
Bowser is coming. Together, we are going to stop that monster.
How? Look at us. We're adorable.
Oh, I got this. No problem.
While working underground to fix a water main, Brooklyn plumbers and brothers Mario and Luigi are transported down a mysterious pipe and wander into a magical new world. But when the brothers are separated, Mario embarks on a quest to find Luigi. Now, Alice, you mentioned you are from Italy. Let's start first with the controversy, shall we? How hard was it for you to see Chris Pratt appropriate your culture? Let's really get into the brass tacks.
Look, was it a hate crime? Who's to say?
Not for us to say.
More for the nonnas. But I will say when it was announced that he was going to be Mario, I think no one was like, that's a great choice.
That's right.
Like,
yeah. Setting aside any negativity, there was nobody on the other end being like, you know what? Stellar choice with Chris Pratt. Nicely done. When I think Mario, I think Chris Pratt. Yes.
Yeah. No, especially because, you know, I actually found out that he was originally meant to be the voice of Sonic in the movies, but then he turned it down to be Mario. So I was a bit relieved that instead of he didn't get to be Sonic, because I think that Ben Schwartz is perfect for Sonic.
Perfect.
But, we could have had Chris Pratt. But then I was like, oh, no. But then everyone else around him seemed to be well cast, especially Jack Black. So I was like, okay, well, supposedly he's been working on this voice. And then the first trailer came out and I was like, oh, no, that's not the voice. And then I was like, it's okay. Everything else might be really good, and then there'll be Chris Pratt. It's okay.
It's okay. Well, we'll get more into the nitty gritty, but we do want to start off with in general. Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I actually ended up on, I'd say, the high side of liked it.
Ooh, high side of liked it.
Yep.
Alice having a good time at Super Mario Brothers movie. I ended up with it's just okay.
Oh.
I started. My starting place was what's much less kind than yours, but I talked myself into some things. We'll okay. chat about it here shortly. But I do want to hear from you since you you seem to really enjoy it. So tell me about how that worked for you, what you enjoyed.
I mean, look, it's not going to win any Oscars, but...
You know a movie's great when the first sentence of the review is, don't count on the Oscars, guys.
But... Okay, and this is what I mean when I landed on High Side of Liked It. Did it have its problems, which we'll get to? Absolutely. Was it perfect? No. But it was what a Mario movie was going to be. You know, this the actual, there isn't really any lore to the game because my, of course, as I've mentioned here before, my partner's a big gamer, all of his friends are, so I've kind of, you know, through osmosis absorbed a lot, and obviously I went with some of them to go see the movie. And they kind of mentioned, you know, I was like, okay, but what happens with this in the story in the game? And they're like, there is no story in the game. He just is an Italian plumber who goes after Peach. That's
in
the
fact,
story.
A lot of the story is just stuff yeah. that was made up by Miyamoto to yeah. to be able to fit it into the game. Like, oh, they're underground, or, you know, there are pipes around. I guess they're yeah. plumbers, or,
yeah.
oh, he's a tiny little pixelized human. I better put a mustache on him so that you can tell yeah. where his nose ends and his mouth begins.
Literally.
You know?
Literally, so. Because I was asking them about different characters in the games, like Wario and Waluigi, because mm-hmm. we were like, oh, you know, where could they kind of show up eventually? And I was like, so what happened? Like, how did they show up in the game? And they're like, they just showed up. I was
yeah,
like,
there's no lore.
I was like, okay, that explains so much. And so I think given all of that, and obviously the fact that they've had to modernize some elements, because you can't just have Peach be the damsel in distress who gets kidnapped and has to mm-hmm. be saved by Mario.
Even though it's like the basic premise of every Mario game, but yes.
I know. But I do respect that they were like, that ain't going to fly in a movie. Uh-huh. You cannot yeah. do that. She's the only girl. Like, uh-huh. you cannot do that. I just really had such a good time. It was, you know, a quick 92 minutes. I had so much fun. And the actual element that really impressed me, that kept almost pulling me out because I was like, oh, wow, was the animation. I thought the animation was beautiful. Like, I thought it was so well done and so specific to the subject. And I just kind of kept loving just looking at the world as it got put together. So that's some initial thoughts from me. Also, Jack Black as Bowser, he brought it. He definitely didn't disappoint. That's for sure. He was Jack Black as Bowser.
Best casting, best performance of the movie, right? Like, I mean,
yes, it's 100%.
And I feel like he's having a lot of fun. I feel like the movie knows how mm-hmm. to use him. I don't feel like the movie knows how to use everybody else.
No.
Even Charlie Day, who's a really funny guy, as Luigi, just kind of felt underutilized. Like, didn't really have a lot of that Charlie Day spark that I love, or wit or sarcasm. Mm. And everything I say will just slide into negatives. I apologize.
That's okay.
But it does seem to, okay. it seems to me that that's part of my issue with the movie, is it just it doesn't really have much of a point of view or much of a sense of humor, or like everything it's doing is it just right on the surface, just, you know, yeah. right there.
I will say, except for, I feel the one thing where I was really like, oh, that kind of is keeping me here emotionally, is the Mario and Luigi relationship. Like, I didn't think I'd care, honestly, going mm-hmm. in. I've never cared about Luigi. Luigi's always been, you know, whenever you're playing Mario Kart, no one ever picks Luigi. So, but I actually really felt for their relationship, and I really wanted them to succeed. And I was like, oh, I love them as brothers. And like, yeah, not to get into negatives early, but that is the one thing that I actually wanted more of. Like, I understand it's, you know, only 90 minutes and it's meant for kids or whatever, but I did feel the one thing that was extremely noticeable was the pacing was very off. It was very quick. Where I was like, okay, I guess we're on our way here now. and that you didn't really sit and develop the relationships, because I felt that, you know, the filmmakers were like, we all know, you guys know what happened. You know where Mario and Peach end up. You know where Luigi and you know what happens. You know the dynamics. We're just going to get there, you know? We're not going to spend... But the elements we spent time on were Bowser and, I felt, Mario and Luigi. And so those were the parts that really kind of stood out to me. And I really enjoyed as a result, for sure.
Yeah, I do have some things I liked. Primary among them, I think the references in this movie... I mean, aside from absolutely drowning in them, I mean, just... yeah. I don't... Like, I think you could do an actual scientific study on Easter eggs. It's appropriate this movie came out Easter weekend. Yeah. because you could do a scientific study on Easter eggs in movies. And I think once they were all counted, this movie would beat every single other movie ever. I cannot think of a movie that has been this jam-packed with references and Easter eggs.
Ready Player One?
Ready Player One has a lot, but there are huge chunks of that movie that are story-based, you know?
That's true.
Every single scene in this movie is a different video game with 100 different Reddit references. Like, there are so many of them. Having said that in what feels like a negative way, they do really well with the references. And what I mean by that is, as a Nintendo lover, I've been a Nintendo kid since the NES, baby. Like, that, I am dead center in the grew up with Nintendo world, right? I had the NES, I had the Super NES, I had the N64, I had the GameCube, I had the Wii, I had the Wii U. Like, I've had them all. I've got a Switch. Like, you know, I'm a Nintendo kid, right? The references that it's making to Mario Kart, Luigi's Mansion, different Mario games, Luna from the Galaxy games, like all these references, the Donkey Kong stuff with the barrels and...
Even
the,
Smash.
It's super, yeah, they're Super Smash Brothers moves that they're putting on each other, like finishing moves. Like all of these references are really well thought out. Like they serve the purpose they're intended to serve, which is that little jolt of, you know, oh, I know what I get that reference, you know. It is literally 90 minutes of just playing the Captain America I understood that reference meme. Like that's what this that's what this movie was for me.
Oh, and the music for me was so intense with that, where I was like, we can have a different score. It doesn't all just have to be the same six pieces of score.
Yeah, well, in this is the cognitive dissonance, right? This is the tug and the pull of a movie like this, is you can say at the same time, you handled your references well, but did it really have to be all references? And I guess what I would say to that will lead me into my other positive, which is I think this is one of the best kids' movies I've seen in a long time. And when I say that, I don't mean movies that are for the whole family where everybody in the family can enjoy them on a different level. I mean, this is a kids' movie. Like the screening I went to, there were lots of kids with parents, and they were having a blast. They loved it so much. This movie is going to make almost $200 million this weekend. It is insane how much families are eating up this movie. And I think there's a good reason for that. A lot of it is, yes, Nintendo has been strangely absent in this, you know, world for a while.
Yeah.
But
I was literally sitting in the theater beforehand and I was like, I am shocked that there hasn't been a Zelda movie.
Yeah.
Like, I am, or a TV show. Like, that is the Nintendo thing that actually has a story and has lore.
Or Metroid. Metroid would be a great one.
Or Metroid. Yeah, actually, that's a really good point. Because I was like, well, I don't think Kirby can have a movie.
Have a movie. For sure Kirby could have a movie.
What is the Kirby movie going to be?
Well, just I guarantee you one thing. It will suck. That is the one guarantee. Thank you. That's what I do.
But like I just was like, I am, because that's, you know, it's not equal to Mario, obviously, in infamy, but it is well known. It's very well known. In fact, in Breath of the Wild, when it came out, everyone was obsessed with it, and now the sequel's coming out. And I was like, That would be such a great, like, show. Honestly, they could do a show on that and it would be like a HBO level sort of show. But I also know that Nintendo is the most intense when it comes to protection of its IP and how, you know, it's represented. And so that's probably why they probably were like, we'll see how this one does and then we'll decide.
I mean, the only thing they've put out there is Pokemon, right?
Yeah, like the, literally.
Not Pet Detective, that's Ace Ventura.
Detective Pikachu.
Detective Pikachu.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, and that's pretty much it since, like, they tried the terrible Mario Brothers movie from a while back.
Yep.
But, yep.
Which so, this is better than.
Yes, say. Low bar, but yes, you are absolutely correct. You're absolutely correct. So not only are, I think there's this huge space for it, I also think they nailed the childishness of it. Which that word has negative connotations, but in this connotation, I just mean the movie is childish in the right ways. It's accessible for children. It's really fun for children. It also doesn't rely on, like, junior high childish humor. Like, there's not a lot of fart
like
jokes.
Like, toilet humor?
Toilet humor.
That was literally going to be one of my points, because if there's one type of humor I cannot stand, it's toilet humor. Like, I just find it so lame. Don't get me wrong. It definitely has its place. I love Shrek as much as the next girl. But, like, it just, when it's overloaded, and we all know, look, the fact that this is Illumination and it made its name on Minions, I was like, oh, no, I don't want toilet humor in my Mario movie. It obviously, like, yes, there are a couple of points, but the points in which it is make sense and are funny, and it didn't have it, like, where every single character is doing it, you know, in every bit. Like, I was really surprised. I was pleasantly surprised by that, for sure.
Especially considering they're plumbers. You know, like, yeah. I mean, it's right there and they still didn't go there, you know, still didn't go there. I mean,
which
they do
good.
Fix a toilet at one point and there is, you know.
Oh my gosh, that scene was so funny though. I was laughing so hard. I thought it was you know what it is? This movie was, you're right, it is definitely like a great kids movie. And I always feel a bit iffy about saying that because it's like, oh, but movies, you know, it's a good kids movie, maybe not as good for adults, and like maybe that's a negative or something. But sometimes movies can just be for kids. There's nothing wrong with that. And if it's still enjoyable, like it used to be that way all the time,
Alice. Yeah. There used to be all kinds of movies that were just for kids.
Exactly. And like, I'm a 29-year-old and I still really I had a good time. And actually, it's funny because you mentioned you were in a theater full of children. I think there was one family in the theater I was, and it was the most packed theater I've been in a very, very long time. Like, people were sitting in the front row, and that hasn't happened in ages, and everyone in there was around my age, and people, I'm not even joking, clapped at the end of this movie. Like, me and we were like, okay, well, come on, guys, let's calm down. It's not like, yes, we all had fun, but let's all just,
not
just
overdo
take it,
here. It
back a notch. Yeah. But people were like laughing and like getting into it. And I think especially people that are, you know, Nintendo kids and have been wanting something Mario for a long time will have, you know, if they kind of just, you're just going to kind of let it take you and just enjoy it. It's a 90 minute ride. You know, you're going to have fun if you
barely makes 90 minutes. It's a nice short movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, I mean, on the flip side, I wouldn't have minded a little bit of extra time just to help create a bit more of an emotional core there. But I will say as well with the references, like, yes, it is reference galore. However, it did actually, I'm surprised they kind of didn't put every single character from the Mario lore in this. Like, they didn't have, you know, some major, major characters show up at all, or like, you know, at all in the story, as it were. And that,
character's,
I mean, obviously,
actually in the movie too, though, for a second.
The type of character.
Yes. Okay, fair.
But not just that character. Like, you know, I'm talking other ones that are very big, very popular characters that games exist around. And they're not in this at all. And obviously they're going to be kept for, you know, a sequel if and when they happen. And I was relieved. I'm like, they're just focusing on the core Mario group. And then if this is successful, I'm certain there'll be a sequel. I mean, it's definitely opening doors for like companion movies for, you know, a movie about Donkey Donkey Kong, a Luigi's Mansion,
a Smash Brothers movie. Like
a Smash Brothers movie. And then you know if it's successful, they're going to do a crossover between Sonic and Mario. Like it could definitely happen.
Yeah.
Could definitely. And then people will just die. People like who are really into those games and have that childhood, they're just going to get so excited. The game cinematic universe, you know.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's no longer if it's successful. This movie is already a behemoth. We'll see where it goes. There will definitely be, like you said, more opportunities to explore other things. It makes sense for the second game to be based on what the after credits scene seems to indicate it would, because that's what the second game introduces as well, a lot of that. So, there's some things that I think will happen on that regard. The final thing I want to say on the positive side. See, I do have positives. I have a lot of positives here.
That's good.
And these are the things that when I look at, they're kind of the main things. And so that's why it kind of brings me up to this movie's okay. It's okay. Like I'm fine with this movie. I don't feel like I have to tear it apart. But the final one is the way this movie visualizes and, enacts the gameplay of the Mario games within the universe is so good. It really understands what makes those games fun to look at and fun to play. When Peach sets up the first trial or whatever,
yeah.
I'm just like, that's a great scene. That's really,
yeah.
really cool. And there were several moments in that I really felt deep in my soul, as someone who has played many levels of many Mario games. So,
yep.
So I want to give a shout out
to
that as well.
I felt just as frustrated as I do whenever Toby's like, do you want to play? Do you want to play? And then I start playing it because I'm not a platformer girl. And so that's kind of what Mario is. And so every time I started playing it and I'm just like, oh, it's stupid. I can't jump over the stupid thing. I did feel that in my soul. I did feel that moment.
All right, I'm going to move us into more direct negatives.
That's okay.
Let's just start here. This movie's terrible. It is terrible as a film. This is not a great film. The story's terrible. The character work is terrible. You mentioned the brother thing. Okay, maybe I'll give you a little bit of the brothers, but every other I don't know what I'm supposed to be rooting for, interested in. The movie itself doesn't seem interested in those things. It is just a series of references based around a very shaky structure of a story. And yeah, as a movie, I didn't find it necessarily funny. I didn't think the humor was really on point
in it. I had fun.
So
I found it funny.
It's not clever.
Such a grump. You're such a grump, Aaron. Come on. It was fun.
It's not subversive. Like, there's nothing interesting going on.
Jesus. Anything else?
it's terrible. Just an all-around terrible film. Look, it's okay. Yeah. I got to it's okay because there's some fun you can have. But it's just a terrible movie.
Look, when we walked out of the theater, my group, you know, we were standing around. We were like, was it amazing? No. Did it have its problems? Yes. Did I have fun and would I see a sequel? Yes. Like, that is pretty much what the consensus was, because absolutely, a normal film, like, it had plenty. The story isn't even really finished. It just kind of ends and you're like, wait, what? You know what I'm talking about, that bit where we're like, wait, what happened? What do you mean? It's kind of the credits. What's happened to this place and this place? That was a pretty big deal.
Uh-huh.
And it's just la la, you know. And then there were other elements brought up, say, character backstories that was like, yes, this is a pretty big revelation about me. And then it's just never touched again.
Never mentioned one more time, Alice. It's like, we're doing the typical character backstory. Excited to see where this character's arc ends. No, the arc never begins. It's just all backstory.
Yeah, which I've almost found funny, because I was like, yeah, it's fine. Like, just, you know, I think they knew what they were making. They were like, we're making a Mario movie. There isn't really a story. We're going to try and piece one together. Mm-hmm. I also have to say, like, the entirety of this movie, I laughed, but it was that sort of like, oh my God, that's so stupid. And then I laughed, you know, and that was kind of, which I mean, Yes. Is it a great movie? No. Is it a good movie? Well, it depends on your perspective. You know, like, am I going to sit around and be like, oh, I can't wait to go see it in the movies again? No. But if I'm in, like, if I'm sick and I'm at home and I just want to watch something fun, I would probably put this on. I'd say that if you're an adult, that's where you're going to land. If you have kids, you're set. Like, that is, you know, your 90 minutes of freedom. They're going to have the best time ever.
Yeah.
And I will also say I loved the fact Bowser's entire motivation, my favorite part of the entire movie. It was, again, so stupid, but so funny. And so, yes, look, it wasn't intelligent. It was Illumination. Look, what do we expect? This isn't Disney here. We're not in Pixar life. We're in Illumination. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to know what you're getting. Like, this isn't a box. A life is a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get. You know exactly what you're going to get. And if you like Mario, you'll enjoy it. You'll have some fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Life is a box of hammers. You know exactly what you're going to get.
And wrenches.
I think the other thing about the humor is when I would laugh at something or have the instinct, oh, that's kind of funny. Whoever that came from, that character, would do that same joke 40 times before the movie was over. The same exact joke with just different words. And that goes for Luna. That goes for the dog who I thought was funny the first time. And then by the third, you know, the 30th time, I'm going, okay, I get it. The dog hates the Mario Brothers. Okay. Yeah. Saw that joke. Like, you know, and it did that with every character, you know? So whether it be Bowser pining for Peach or whatever it is, and it's just like, find humor outside of those same exact areas with each character, I guess, is what I wanted a little bit more out of it.
No, I do agree. Like, I will say the catchphrases, if you're worried there's not going to be the Mario catchphrases, worry not, because I think they did a slow motion version of Mamma Mia about three times in the movie. Like, we were talking about it later on. We're like, do you think that in the editing bay, they're like, oh, it'd be funny if this happened. And then they put it in multiple parts of the movie and then forgot to take out all the other ones and just kept them all in.
Yeah.
Because after, especially accidental. That last one, I was like, I swear I just saw this. Like, I swear I just saw this 20 minutes ago. I will also say the use of music, like not score, of the soundtrack. I was like, did they just go, okay, what are the top 10 most popular soundtrack songs that have been used in every single movie since the beginning of time? Cool. We'll buy all of those and then we'll use them in the
soundtrack.
Movie.
What a weird soundtrack. When the pop songs came on, it's like, okay, we're Take On Me right now? Like, what is going on?
Yeah, and that actually really, really annoyed my like partner and his friends and stuff, because they were like, the Donkey Kong music is so great. They're like, it's so amazing, and they put this stupid song over it. And I was like, I'm just having a fun time. I like this song. It's fun.
Yeah.
Although all I was doing was going, wow, their music supervisor must have had so much money at their disposal to get all these songs. But I will say they were also the most unoriginal songs in a movie ever, because it also didn't really make sense with their choices. It was just more like, people like this song, okay, put it in. And then I was like, okay, well, all right, I've seen this before in about 50 other kids movies.
I don't know that I have a lot more to say about this. I will re-mention, since I just did spend a little bit of time kind of tearing the movie apart, at the end of the day, it's fine, it's okay. Like, I think this movie is accomplishing many of the things it sets out to accomplish. Specifically, it's entertaining families and children in a big way, and people are having fun with it. And how do you argue against that? Like, go have fun. Like, you don't have to. You don't have to make an Oscar-worthy movie to find purpose. So I'm glad people are enjoying it. I also have admitted to enjoying certain parts of this movie. So
admitted against your will,
against
held down
my will.
At gunpoint.
That's right.
And it's like, yes, I enjoyed it. Yeah. You don't want Nintendo to be mad at you.
No, I do not. Not at all. So there you go. I don't know if there's anything else to say. There is a post-credit scene. We already kind of alluded to that. Yes. Yes, indeed. One is kind of a post-credit sketch. The other is kind of a sequel-baiting post-credit scene. So you can stick around for those if you want. Any final words, Alice?
Look, just don't go in with a critic's brain. Go in with your inner child. That's all you have to know. Is like it's just for fun. That's it. Not every movie was designed to win awards or get, you know, fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. Mm-hmm. Some movies were just made. And honestly, if these were the kind of movies that were being brought out that were just meant to be fun and silly and not, say, the stupid Transformers movies or anything, or like Fast and the Furious, I'd be way happier. I would rather this kind of movie than those kind of movies. This could be famous last words because there could be like 10 sequels after this and then I might want to just cry. So we shall see.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to the Kart and the Marioist series of movies. All right, there you go. That is the, I almost said the Super Mario Super Show. That's the old cartoon. That is the Super Mario Brothers movie. And weirdly enough, kind of a recommend.
Oh, and Chris Pratt, not the worst part of the movie. Totally forgot to mention him.
Well, I think because he's kind of the least mentionable part of the movie. Like, he's fine. He's fine.
Yeah, he's fine.
Guess what, everybody? Chris Pratt, he's fine.
Yeah.
Who knew? All right, let's move on to our next review. Let's talk a little bit about Air.
1984 has been a tough year. Our sales are down. Our growth is down.
Sonny, I brought you in here to grow the basketball business.
People don't know what the hell a Nike is.
What's a Converse?
NBA All-Star shoe.
There's nothing cool about Nike.
You would have to have a pretty compelling pitch.
I can tell them the one thing the other companies can't compete with. Our basketball division is terrible.
I do not love it.
Sonny Vaccaro and Nike pursue basketball rookie Michael Jordan, creating a partnership that revolutionizes the world of sports in contemporary culture. This is Ben Affleck in the director's chair and Matt Damon and Ben Affleck writing a movie. Let's go. Always good to see those guys working together. I'm curious, what'd you think? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
It's a good week for movies for me, Aaron. I really liked this one. Okay. I don't think I'll end on loved. I mean, I just saw it last night, so you got to give me at least 24 hours, but mm-hmm. I really liked it. I had a really good time.
I loved this movie. I think these guys just know how to write a really engaging story, and it's really interesting because there's not a lot of shock and surprise here. I guess we know what happens. I will ask you. I mean, it's mm-hmm. Michael Jordan is a worldwide sports figure. I'm curious as to where your knowledge of Jordan started, like, you know, what your experience with the Michael Jordan thing has been in your life, because you're much younger than I am.
Aaron, my gym bag is a Chicago Bulls bag.
That's wild.
I'm a Bulls girl. I'm a Bulls girl. I have been. My dad is a big, like, basketball is my sport. When I've been growing up, I went to states. I played basketball all my life. I love basketball. And Michael Jordan, of course, was like growing up. I loved him, idolized him. My dad is really into basketball. So that kind of is where it originated, my gym bags. My dad's old gym bag that now I use. So it's been passed down. And the Bulls and like everything about it. I love basketball. So I was very keen for this one.
it's wild to me because I think it speaks to just the absolute ubiquity of Michael Jordan because, I mean, I know you come to it through your dad, you know, partially, but I mean, you were born when he was finishing up his second run of titles. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like in the mid-90s, like you were born in the mid-90s when he was kind of finishing up his life as a superstar winning championships. Mm-hmm. And then, you know.
And then Space Jam happened and it was amazing.
And you live on the other side of the planet.
Yep.
Like it's wild to me. And yet I'm not surprised and you're not the only one. And I think that, you know, this movie touches on how impressive that is, and also specifically this movie touches on how impressive it is to kind of foresee that and, mm-hmm. you know, for these characters to believe that so much that they were willing to do what they did. And that's what makes this story interesting. It has a very clear, understandable, compelling through line for the plot. And mm-hmm. I think that that is very underrated in movies anymore. I think movies think it's much more about set pieces and big moments and those kind of things. Does this movie have big moments? Of course it does. But those big moments don't mean as much if it doesn't just have that solid, you know, point A to point B, here's what we're doing kind of thing.
And the big moments aren't like big set pieces, you know what I mean? They're, right. they're big emotional and big character moments. Like that's, and actually I read a piece of trivia last night, which was very interesting. So originally this film was going to be straight release on Amazon Prime. Like this wasn't going to be released in theaters, but the test scores were so high that Amazon was like, well, we need to release this in theaters. Mm-hmm. So just goes to show, because it felt, when even when it was coming out, I was like, really? Exclusive to theater? This feels like it should be in, you know, especially because the Tetris movie just came out. And I was like, that's kind of the same sort of vibe. And then I went in and I was like, okay, well, let's go see what this is. And especially because this is Ben Affleck's first directorial debut that is not a crime thriller or like in that sort of vein. This is his first, you know, not like tension for a more positive reason, no death and mayhem, and it was like he did. I mean, Ben Affleck, he's a good director, like, and it's nice to be reminded of that and to see that talent happen. And then him and Matt Damon are excellent when they work together. They really do create magic, and it is just so great to kind of see it continue so long into their careers.
And they know how to write for each other. And mm-hmm. I think Ben is not afraid of playing these quirky, weird characters. And Phil Knight was a quirky, weird person. I don't mean that as a pejorative, by the way. I love quirky, weird people. I am one of them. And so it's fun to see him do that. And then Matt Damon, he just does this thing where he just has
charismatic.
This, yeah. I mean, his Riz levels are off the charts. Like he is so charismatic. And it's wild because he also plays that guy that's just like probably a little bit of a, you know, could be a loser at life, get stepped on a little bit, but you know, underneath they just kind of know what's going on. And you know, you just, some of those scenes, I bought it. I just bought so much of what he's doing in this. I also think it's worth mentioning Viola Davis in this as Michael Jordan's mom. You may not go into this realizing we're not really telling the story of how Michael Jordan picked Nike. We're telling the story about how Dolores Jordan picked Nike. And that adds a really interesting flavor because we don't know Dolores Jordan as well as we know Michael. I found all of that really compelling.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting way to tell the story, because I'll be honest, when the trailers were coming out, I was worried. Like, I was interested because it looked good, but I was like, oh no, don't tell me that this is going to be... I was worried about the white savior thing. I really was. Sure. I was like, don't tell me they're going to make it out that like these guys are the reason for Michael Jordan. You know, I was just like, and then the only thing that made me hopeful was the fact that Viola Davis was in this movie, because, you know, we all know that, you know, since The Help has come out, she's turned around and been like, I probably shouldn't have done that. And there's been a lot of reflection on that movie. And I'm like, surely she wouldn't do it again. Like, surely there's something else happening here. And I was pleasantly surprised. It's not about how Nike made Michael Jordan or is the reason for his success. In fact, it's literally quite almost the opposite. It's about how Michael Jordan, he was going to be the star. He was going to be the one. Maybe not everyone saw it quite yet, but I mean, we all know now who Michael Jordan is, but at the time he was primed to become who he ends up being. And so it was really about how his decision and his family's decision is created a revolution in sports, in athlete deals, and in just also Nike's presence in the market. And it was more about how Michael helped Nike, not the other way around. And that was a really great positioning for me. I really enjoyed that as a different way of telling what is typically the direction they go for a sports biopic, especially. So I really enjoyed that.
I'm so excited to see this again. I love so many scenes in this movie. I love it when a movie captures me because of its dialogue and because of like the tete-a-tete scenes and the speeches. There are a couple tear-jerking speeches in this.
They're so good.
There's some really fun scenes between Chris Messina as Jordan's agent and Matt Damon.
Oh my God, that was great. They're so good.
I think Jason Bateman is great in everything he's done, and he's so good here.
I wanted to bring him up. He was actually, I think, because everyone's like, oh yeah, Ben Affleck, Viola Davis, Matt Damon. But I really, really liked Jason Bateman. He is such a great actor. He's so great. He's so good at, when he's in a role, he always does an excellent job. And he has a really touching, well, not speech, but definitely moment where he kind of explains his perspective, and I couldn't look away the entire time.
So
like
good.
It's not a showy moment. It's nothing crazy. It's not the big moment of the movie, but it was just a character moment. And I really was like, it felt real, everything about it. And I was like, wow, I love Jason Bateman. He's so good.
It's one of those moments that catches you off guard because you think it's kind of one thing, but then you realize he's kind of calling a friend on the carpet. But he's doing it with such grace. Like, he's doing it with the real ability of, you know, it's just something you don't see enough, not just in movies, but in real life, of, you know, people resolving conflict or, you know, finding a way through disagreements or seeing things differently. And I thought Jason Bateman was great. Matthew Marr plays the designer, the shoe designer, and has some of the funniest moments in this movie. I just think there's this movie's just so well balanced. It's just so well balanced with the humor and the emotion and the story. And man, just great stories told greatly. It's always going to win for me.
I wonder if this film's going to be remembered come Oscars time, because this feels like a movie that should be. You know, I mean, I don't know what else is coming out this year. We're only in April, but everything about it felt like it should be. And I mean, we just proved this time last year, Everything Everywhere came out, and that was definitely
remembered. Everything Everywhere is flashy and and kind of genre changing bending, like, you know, there's a lot of like interesting things to keep that going. What makes me think it might be in the discussion is more Coda. Coda won 2 years ago. Coda came out early, and Coda is kind of like this, where it's just more just a great story with some heartstring stuff. So I think there's a possibility. It's just so hard to know what will happen. I will certainly keep it on my my list. I really don't have much negative to say about this. I loved this movie. What are some of your negatives?
Well, actually, really quick, before we go into negatives, I have one more thing I wanted to mention, is that this was like, it was filmed on film. Like, it wasn't filmed digitally. And about halfway through the movie, I realized, I was like, oh my gosh, I literally feel like I'm watching a movie not set in the 80s, made in the 80s. Like everything about it, the way it's shot, the way the scenes work, the dialogue, the character work, I was just like, this, I feel like I'm in the 80s watching a movie that's at the cinemas right now. And I really like that, because I think it helped absorb me further into the story, which isn't something, you know, that typically happens as much anymore. And I just loved the technical crafting behind it, which is not, again, something that you hear about much when it's this kind of movie. Generally, it's the big, big like movies where it's like, oh, the set design, the costumes, blah, blah, blah. But in this, it's like, it was all very well thought out and very carefully crafted, and you could see the love behind the camera in the decisions, including the fact that it was shot on film. And I really appreciated that. And so I wanted to call that out for sure.
It's interesting. You mentioned the 80s thing, and you also mentioned Tetris, which I won't go too much into this because we may still review this on the show. I'm not sure. We just haven't gotten around to Tetris yet. But I think they are nice comparison movies. I think so many of the things that this movie does well, Tetris does not do well. And so many of the nostalgia hits with the music are perfectly used here, whereas they feel gimmicky in Tetris. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those examples of movies that are kind of trying to do the same thing. Tell the story of big success, you know, in the 80s, and landing the right deal at the right time. And I just, this one, I think, is the one that understands a lot of that stuff. So yeah, it's really, really good. Do you have anything else you want to mention? before we move on?
Yeah, so I do have, I don't know if it's a negative. It's more, it got distracting for me after a while. And I understand why it happened. I'm trying to say it without saying spoilers, but
okay.
There's an important character to this entire story who isn't present in the way that you might typically think them to be present in a movie like this. They are specifically left out of the, and are not shown, as it were, right? And I thought that was a very interesting choice. And for me, particularly towards the end, it was something that got a little distracting. Because I was like, why aren't they showing this person? Or like, why are they specifically hiding? And I, like, again, I understand why. I do. I see the point. It's just something that I felt distracted about 3/4 of the way through. And then I pulled myself back and it was fine. But it was something that was enough for me to mention, if that makes sense.
I understand what you're saying. I completely disagree. I think it's one of the best choices the movie makes. I think it would have been terrible to show that character. I don't know why we're talking around. I think everybody knows what we're saying. But I think once you do that, the movie just changes. It just becomes very distracting. In ways that it doesn't have to be. So I think it's a great choice.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I get it. And I think that it works because you're right. It would have gotten I don't think it should have been like the third main character or anything like that, right? I just think there was a moment in the movie where I was like, oh, and this is where they're going to show up. Like, this is the moment. And then it didn't. And I was just like, oh, okay.
But they're in
and
the then movie.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they are in the movie. Like,
that's
them,
what I'm like, saying. That's yeah. what I'm saying. And if you do anything else, you can't really do that, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, well, yeah. Once that bit popped up, I was like, but before that, I was like, okay, well, just like, it's so obvious that it is happening. Also, this is not a con, but when at the end, you know, you have your like, where are they now moments, and oh my God, just so much money. I was like, what?
Alice, are you struggling with capitalism right now? Struggling a little bit with capitalism?
Passive income? I want a month of that. Like, yeah. Anyway.
Just like 0.0001% passive income. That's it. That'll be great.
So, yeah.
That's all I need.
Yeah, that'd be great. That's all I need. But yeah, I'm like, wow. Yeah. Well, good job, Dolores, is what I'll say. He should, like, the mum really just, she did the correct thing. That negotiation is better than any agents ever negotiated for their client ever. And then final thing as well, I actually really like the almost Tarantino-esque chapter use with the kind of, like, tenets of Nike throughout the movie. I thought that was a really interesting creative choice, and I really enjoyed that.
There are some really fun creative choices here amidst the fun dialogue choices and character choices, and it's a fun movie. It's a fun movie to watch. Like I said, I can't wait to watch it again. I'm really excited to revisit this
Stick
movie.
Stick your kids in Mario, and then you guys can go see Air. Either way, WB's going to make money. They're happy.
That's right. Either way. Well, there you go. That is Air. It is in theaters as well. Before we head on to the Best Ever Challenge, just a thank you to our Sift Pop members. You guys are the best. Really appreciate you. You keep the podcast going and the website going. We could not do it without you. If you're curious about the perks, all that fun stuff, like last week we did a bonus show of Andrew did a D&D campaign with Ian and I, a short D&D campaign.
Ooh.
So you can check that out in your members-only podcast feed. All of that is at Patreon, patreon.com/siftpop.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, best ever challenge. Now, Alice, one time you were on, we did best ever movie set in Italy in honor of your Italian heritage. And we have another Italian character in a movie today, so let's go back to it. Best ever Italian protagonist movies. So these are the best ever movies that have a prominent Italian character. They don't necessarily have to have been born in Italy, but are clearly of Italian descent. So
okay, because this is something I thought, because in the email and everything that you sent out, it said it's descent, and I'm like, so do they have to not be Italian but have come from people that are Italian?
No, it could be either.
Okay, my list would be slightly different. That's okay.
Do you want some time? Yeah.
It's Alice, all right. It's done. I can give you some time. I'm already done. I'm done. There was just one movie I wanted to include, and then I was like, no, and then I did. So it's fine.
Great. Good job. All right. We will go number five to number one. If you've got it higher, then we will...
Trump
the picks when they are higher, so we can talk about them at their highest. Start us off at your number five, Alice.
My number five is Brooklyn, the movie with Saoirse Ronan.
It's so good. Where I love that movie.
I didn't think of that one. Yeah, well, you're going to find a lot on this movie, on this list, that you might not have thought of, because there are a lot of obvious movies that should go on this list that your girl has not seen yet. So that is why. But yeah, I loved Brooklyn. I think that's just, again, one of those movies where it's just a quiet story about two people that meet and fall in love at a time in America, and it is beautiful. I remember loving it so much the year it came out. I watched it a few times, and it's just so nice. You know, sometimes you just want a nice movie, and this is a nice movie, and it's romantic, and Saoirse Ronan is amazing, as always, so can recommend for sure.
I am so glad you brought up Brooklyn. Brooklyn is so underrated, underseen, just nobody talks about it enough. And Saoirse Ronan is so good in it. And you're right, it's just a great movie to watch. Yeah, big recommend for me on that one as well. So good call. Brooklyn is a great call.
Thank you.
My number five is Don John, at number five, the Joseph Gordon-Levitt character.
I thought that was the one you were talking about. I couldn't remember. I was like, surely that's not the movie. Oh, yeah, that's a fun movie. I forgot he's Italian.
Yeah, I think Scarlett Johansson's character is as well. I think they both kind of come from Italian families, and the idea of this movie and why I fell in love with it, it's a movie about porn. It's a movie about kind of the addiction to porn. But it's also a movie that does this really interesting comparison of how pornography affects in stereotypically a male's view on a relationship, and then counterbalances that with how rom-coms and romance affects a female's view, stereotypically again, of you know, male-female relationships. And so it's, I really thought that was not only interesting but kind of important, because I think it's easy enough to be like, oh, why do you believe that's not really sex? You know, that's not sex. Like, that's not, you know, that's porn. That's not sex. And at the same time, we're much lighter on, do you really believe that's relationships? Do you really believe the movies, you know, the Sleepless in Seattle, that's real? Do you think that's real? You know, so there's this idea that I think the movie plays with that's really, really interesting. And I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt directed it, if I remember correctly.
Yes, he did. I remember, because it was a big selling point of the movie when it came out.
Yeah. Yeah. So I found it to be brutally honest and really interesting. So I wanted to mention Don John at my number five.
And written by him.
Yeah. Yeah. That as well. All right. Number four. What do you got, Alice?
Okay. This is the one that I quickly swapped in. So because it's new and because I loved it so much, Guillermo del Toro's Pinocchio, because the entire thing is extremely Italian. So as a Florentine, for those who don't know, Carlo Collodi, who created Pinocchio, is from Florence. So it's like the big thing from Florence. Mm-hmm. I mean, besides the obvious, like Da Vinci and Michelangelo and Medici and stuff. But I mean, in terms of like recent history, Pinocchio is originated in Florence. And so because of that, it's always been connected to me, and I've had to study it tons of times growing up. And I cannot stand Pinocchio as a character. I hate him so much. I've never enjoyed him. I've always found him to be the most irritating little boy ever. And so, especially in the origin of the book, like when you read the book, I was like, oh, you suck. So, color me surprised when I watched the new one, when I watched Guillermo del Toro's version, and it was just magical. It kind of reawakened the story for me. I loved the interpretation and the reimagining of the setting and the story, like the specific moments that we all know, you know, 10 times over of the original Pinocchio story and from the movie and etc. And it actually, for the first time, made me not realize, but made me believe the fact that this is just a little boy trying to realize, like, understand what humanity is and where he fits and going through all these emotions. And it didn't make me irritated by it. It made me feel for him. I actually really appreciated the relationships and I mean, as well, the animation is just stunning, like absolutely stunning. And I love that he didn't just do a adaptation of the story as we know it, because we all know it. It's boring. We've seen it a million times. This was so nice, especially setting it in Mussolini's Italy, something that is still recent memory for many alive Italians today. And so it's just brilliant. I'm so happy that it exists. And honestly, it's probably my favorite adaptation of the Pinocchio story. So
nice. Yep. Really like I really it. Love it as well. Great choice. Great choice. My number four is probably the most obvious answer to this question that one could give. But it is a great movie. Godfather is my
Trump.
Sorry, I didn't mean to call one of your picks obvious. All right. So on to your number three then.
My number three is Silver Linings Playbook, because
interesting.
The main character and his family are very obviously Italian. His name is Pat Solitano. They specifically talk about Italian elements in the movie. Mm-hmm. And when you have Robert De Niro playing your dad, I mean, that's an Italian family.
There you
right
go. There you go.
So I so love Silver Linings Playbook. I don't know why. It's just one of those movies that every single time I watch it, I so thoroughly enjoy it, especially because it came out at my time when I was really, really like a huge fan of Jennifer Lawrence, like massive fan, the kind of level of fan that I am now for Florence Pugh at the time I was, and I still am to an extent, Jennifer Lawrence. And so I was very excited when this movie came out. It's unfortunate that this film then gave way to American Hustle, but we don't need to talk about that. And
it's funny. I think American Hustle is better than Silver Linings Playbook.
Blasphemous. No.
I just think it's a better movie.
What?
Yeah.
Aaron, what are you doing? No, it's not. I love Silver Linings Playbook. It's such a good movie. And it's got Chris Tucker in it, like in Air. So
like in Air, yeah.
I had to bring it up. Well, I really like it. And people out there listening who haven't seen either, don't listen to Aaron. Silver Linings Playbook.
I didn't say it was bad. I just said I liked another movie better. That doesn't mean it's a bad movie.
Okay. Well, it's really good. I love the exploration of mental health and relationships and how it's not just, you know, when somebody is suffering as a result of mental illness, there are elements that could be manifested or just kind of shown in, or present, I should say, in their family and their relationships that haven't been obviously labeled. And this idea of labeling and working through it. And then obviously it's just a fun underdog story as well. So yeah, I really like Silver Linings Playbook.
There you go. Silver Linings Playbook in at number three. My number three is the second most obvious answer you could give to this question. And maybe you'll trump this one as well. I don't know. I have Rocky, the original Rocky.
I haven't seen it.
It's okay. It's okay. It's not like it's, you know, where you're from or anything.
Yeah, Creed is in my buried treasure, and that was my original number five because of the fact that I haven't seen Rocky, and I was like, I feel like I need to have it somewhere in my list. So I do recognize it. I will see it eventually. It's on my list.
It's really good. The original movie is really, speaking of like a movie that somebody poured their passion into, you know, wrote it for themselves, refused to give up on that dream, refused to sell it unless he could, you know, play the main actor, but Rocky is really, really good. It's so different than what the franchise would become. But it's really, really good. So that's my number three. Your number two.
I'm very curious to see your reaction to this one. My number two is Ratatouille. Linguini is Italian. His mum is called Renata, and I googled it. He's like French Italian. So
nice.
It counts. So, I mean, what do I have to say about Ratatouille? I think it's got one of my favorite score in all of Pixar. When we were in Paris earlier this year, I literally couldn't wait. We had one day planned where we just got a bunch of food, went home and watched it while in our little Paris apartment that we were staying in. And I was just, you know, walking around being like, it's like in Ratatouille. I don't know why. It just makes Paris so much more magical. And I love food and I love this movie and it's amazing. And
Yeah, Ratatouille is amazing. If I had thought about it, I would have included it on my list for sure. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Linguini certainly is Italian. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
Yeah.
My number two is a bit of a stretch, much more of a stretch than Ratatouille, just because I don't know that you would consider the Italian characters in this movie the main characters, but they play such a major role. But I'm going with Do the Right Thing at number two.
No, that was in my honorable mention. So
okay. Yeah, so yeah, I think it does. It's definitely got like, you know, the Italian, the New York Italian kind of thing is a very central part of the race relations that are being shown in this movie. I've mentioned many times. I think I cried the first time I talked about this movie on the show. It's hard for me to watch a movie like this so much after it came out first, like because I caught up on this during the pandemic for the first time ever. Wow. Hadn't watched it. And it's so hard to watch it and just go, the Black community has been saying this for how long? And how long has it taken me to really feel it and listen and understand and... Because it's police brutality. The movie's about police brutality in the Black community. And it's so powerful. It's so well done. Spike Lee is just a master, and he's doing masterwork in this movie.
And he didn't win an Oscar.
Yeah. High recommend for Do the Right Thing, for sure.
It's a great movie.
The Academy didn't do the right thing.
Yeah. What did win? I'm looking it up. What won instead that year for best writing? I mean, it wasn't even nominated for best picture. But yeah. It was Dead Poets Society was what won that year. Oh, that was a stacked year between that, When Harry Met Sally. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. But still, yep. This is probably... I love Dead Poets Society, but this was a better screenplay.
I agree. And yeah. I also like Dead Poets Society. Yeah. All right, what's your number one?
My number one, I mean, I trumped it, so we all know. It's the obvious one, and I feel that one of my best friends would have murdered me if I didn't put this as my number one, because it's his favorite film of all time. Uh-huh. The Godfather, of course. I also think that it would have been a hate crime against my people if I didn't specifically say The Godfather, because it's the greatest Italian-American story of all time. And because I watched, I haven't rewatched it yet. I really should. It's been a while, but I watched, obviously, the show, which escapes the name.
The Offer?
Came out, yeah, last year, and it gave me an appreciation, just a full reappreciation for the movie, and, you know, I was talking about it with my friend and everything, and it is a three-hour movie that somehow doesn't make me want to rip my eyes out in boredom, you know, like, especially because it was from the 70s and the setting and just all the chaos behind the scenes. And I just think it is one of the greatest movies of all time for a reason. And mm-hmm. You just have to, if you're into cinema, you have to have an appreciation for The Godfather. I mean, it's still so iconic to this day. And then also somehow had a sequel, just the one, like there's two, but there's the one sequel that somehow some would say, you know, up and like went even better, was even better, mm-hmm. and was just like at least just as good. And so great, just fantastic filmmaking.
Yeah, I don't really have a ton to add. It's, you know, it's considered one of the greatest movies ever for a reason. Mm-hmm. It's such a sweeping, broad, epic story, mm-hmm. and hard not to get into, even with my predilections against kind of gangster stories and, you know, especially when there isn't someone to root for.
I'm literally the same normally, but I think I when I first watched it, I didn't have as much of an appreciation as I have now. But I will say that was the same with speaking of what we were talking about before, Do the Right Thing. I watched that in uni for the first time and I was bored. I'm sorry. But now I've rewatched it now that I'm a bit older and wiser and I understand, you know, politics and culture mm-hmm. a little bit more. And it's crazy how what even a couple of years will do for your understanding or re-understanding of movies. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In perspective, that's a good word for it.
What I tell people with the Godfather, why I like that and don't particularly like things like Goodfellas, those kind of things, is I think Francis Ford Coppola has a deeper understanding of the consequence and not just the consequence of the actions, but also the ugliness of the actions as they're happening. Whereas Scorsese oftentimes gets lost in the exuberance of the actions.
Yeah.
He gets lost in the excitement and adrenaline of murder or gun violence or whatever it might be. And I just think that's a slight enough difference that The Godfather feels a little more palatable to me than Goodfellas or some of those other movies. So so there you go.
Agreed.
That is
Agreed.
My number four, your number one.
Mm-hmm.
My number one, I'm all of a sudden feeling self-conscious, maybe isn't Italian. Roma? Roma's Italian. No,
it's Mexican. Aaron.
Now, one of the characters in Roma is from Italy. I know it. I know it's true. Hold on.
Stand by while we look this up. I mean, I'm pretty sure it is. To be fair, it's confusing because the movie's called Roma.
So, yes.
But I'm pretty... Isn't it about Alfonso Cuarón's, like, growing up?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. In Mexico. So here's the mistake. Just so you, dear listener, understand what just happened. Your beloved host until today did not do his prep until right before the show. And he had quite a day and was like, oh... in his search of Italian films. Oh, Roma's an Italian film. Well, that would be 1972, the movie Roma. That would be Fellini's Roma that is an Italian film.
Yeah, so, I was like, I think you got a bit confused.
So just to be clear, I didn't think about this until just now. I just put it down because I saw it in my research. I was like, I love Roma. That'll be my number one. So my apologies. I have let you all down, and you have every right never to listen to this podcast again.
It's all right. You could be a Fellini fan. We don't know.
My number one, was and continues to be and has always been Ratatouille. That is my number one.
Okay. Yeah. That's challenge. Okay. Roman holiday. There you go.
Yeah.
Roman holiday.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Anything that has that in there.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding, amazing Italian film. Really,
thank you. You're really helping me move on from this, Alice. I really appreciate you just helping me put this behind us and move into the honorable mentions. I'll go ahead and throw out My Cousin Vinny because I do enjoy that movie. I'm sure you have some honorable mentions you wanted to throw out.
Yes, again, not the obvious. I'm sure people were waiting for like Goodfellas, Raging Bull, that sort of thing. But I haven't seen him yet, so. I don't know. The other ones I have is Roman Holiday is one. Luca is another one because we love Pixar. And it's just so nice to see Italy animated. I don't know why. Well, it's because I'm from there. That's why. And then Wolf of Wall Street because I enjoy it. It's fun. And Margot Robbie's character is Italian. So it counts. Yeah,
there you
Nat La Paglia. That's an Italian name. So
indeed. Well, quickly moving to something else. we're gonna finish off.
Anyway, we gotta go. Bye, guys.
We're gonna finish off with a buried treasure. What is that one thing in any area of pop culture that you want to make sure that people know about? You're our guest, Alice, so you will go last. I'll kick us off. I've been watching some silent films, just kind of checking off some that I hadn't really seen. Yet, and what I wanted to talk about isn't really available any at the major streaming services. So you're going to have to do a hunt for this. Maybe YouTube, some different places might have at least some pieces of it. But I finally got around to watching the epic Intolerance, Love Struggle Throughout the Ages. This is D.W. Griffith. Now, you may know D.W. Griffith's name from Birth of a Nation, a very racist movie from the year before this came out, which I also just watched recently and have many, many things to say about that movie. But that's for another day, not for right now. but you can follow my letterbox if you want to see some of those things. But Intolerance is... It's really interesting to watch what D.W. Griffith is doing in 1916 or whatever, 107 years ago, because he's inventing cinema. He's just inventing what movies are and the way that scenes cut from one scene to another, or he'll overlay, one scene over another to do special effects, or he'll use a certain kind of camera angle or different things. And it's just like, can you imagine just like inventing that stuff? Just like nobody has played in this world before. You're the first into the sandbox and you're doing this incredible stuff. I found the intercutting stories. Like, you know, people are like, oh, man, Pulp Fiction invented nonlinear intercutting story, stories or whatever. And it's like, let me introduce you to the second movie ever made. But it's really cool. And I also enjoyed what the movie is saying about this idea of love trying to battle discrimination and different things like that. It's so ironic to me that this is the movie he made the year after he made Birth of a Nation. Like the disconnect to not be able to see how his messages in this movie might have applied a year ago to the movie he made and the worldview he espoused is really interesting to me. I kind of want to do some studying on this. I haven't really studied up on D.W. Griffith and his personal views. I know there was a note card at the beginning of Birth of a Nation that kind of indicates... He, not that he was distancing himself from the views, but there is a thing like, we have to see views to understand them, kind of a free speech kind of warning card. It was really interesting to watch a silent film from 1916 or whatever, and the first thing that comes up is like warning controversial stuff.
That maybe happens included. When you watch Aristocats on Disney Plus, so it's fine.
Yeah, no. But this was no. I don't mean one added afterwards. I mean this is in the original movie.
Really?
That's interesting. What I'm saying. Yeah, that's okay. What I'm saying. So, this movie would be full of all the modern warning cards. I was talking in the moment. But Love Struggle Throughout the Ages really does seem to understand the difference between what it means to lead and live with love and what it means to lead and live, seeking power or, money or whatever the case may be. I found it really interesting. Obviously when you go into a silent film, especially one from 107 years ago, you kind of have to go in with knowing what it is. You can't go in expecting Super Mario Brothers movie. You have to.
It's not the Avengers,
Right. Yeah. So, but I think if you're willing to open your mind to it, then it might be interesting. It's also interesting watching some of these pre-code movies. Because the Hays Code just shut down the ability of filmmakers completely to say certain things or show certain things. There's nudity in this movie. There's, violence in this movie, that never would have been allowed during the Hays Code or whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't find it exploitative. I don't find it works with what the movie is trying to do.
Well, it's how it is nowadays, It's just they just, the moral code came in. It was, because I studied all of this at uni, and it was just absolutely fascinating just how intensely the morality got applied. And then obviously everyone was like, this sucks, let's get rid of it after a long, but it did significantly impact storytelling for a long time. Even down to, you can kiss, but only for this long, and you can't move. Right. That's why all those older movies, when they kiss, it's weird because they're moving their heads, but they're not allowed to move their mouths. And so they had to show passion in other ways. And the way they kind of had to surmount that, and how that just wasn't present in the early movies. In the early movies, you're 100% right, just experimenting with everything. And when I was in Paris, sorry, I feel like that person who's just come back from a trip and they're like, yes, when I was in, but we went to the Père Lachaise Cemetery and saw the tomb of Georges Méliès, who you might recognize his name from A Trip to the Moon, or if you've seen Hugo, you'd recognize his name. And I remember learning about him because this man invented the science fiction film genre and special effects and storyboards. People didn't use storyboards until he did. And then, and he just did all this crazy sci-fi stuff, which in 1902, he did A Trip to the Moon, where it's he didn't have CG or even practical effects. He just, it was all practical effects using literally smoke and mirrors. And it's bizarre to watch it now. Absolutely bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting stuff. It's Intolerance, Love, Struggle Throughout the Ages. If you find a way to watch it, I highly recommend it. Very interesting. Mm-hmm. What about you, Alice? What's your buried treasure?
Well, I don't know if this is buried, but we all know your girl loves Harry Potter. Well, I've said this before. That's not a surprise. And I bought a PS5 last year with the specific intention of buying Hogwarts Legacy when it came out, because it was announced 2 years ago or something. And I was like, oh, my God. And I finished it this week, finally. I 100%ed the game. It took me 55 hours. And oh, my gosh, I cannot tell you how much I loved this game. It is beautiful. The animation is stunning, just mind-blowing. The music, the score, I loved every moment. And the story is actually fascinating. I think they announced that HBO Max is going to be making a show based on the game. And I'm very excited for that, because the story is actually really well made. I want to see this story told in a more narrative way. But also just everything about it, it's set obviously, over 100 years before Harry Potter. So none of that, Voldemort doesn't exist. None of that exists. And you learn, you're just a student and you're kind of, involved in this ancient magic conspiracy, basically. So this new kind of magic gets introduced and you meet all these new characters and, all the bad guys are completely different bad guys. But also the combat system, Oh, it's so fun. Like, you can cast all these spells and you can learn unforgivable curses, and you can cast them. And I will say it is a little bit fun to cast Avada Kedavra on people when you're fighting them.
decided to be around Alice.
I was playing it and you obviously have Avada Kedavra on there, but it is an OP because once you cast it, it takes a really long time to load back up. So you can't just go there and just kill people immediately. But I was playing it and I was fighting against some spiders and casting it. And my partner walked in and he was horrified. He was like, "Why did you kill that spider?" And I was like, "It's okay. They're evil spiders." And I was like torturing other ones and casting Imperio on other ones. And they have such great animation. And also what I like, it's one of those games where you can get a good ending, a bad ending, and a true ending. So your character actually, you might end up evil, you might end up good, and then if you go the full thing, you can get the full true ending. But oh my gosh, it's just so much fun. Like, it's an open world game. You get to explore, you get to fly hippogriffs, you get to fly brooms, you get to go to classes, you can adopt animals and like take care of them, like unicorns and puffskins, and it's just everything you've ever wanted while reading those books, where it's like, I want to be a wizard. I got to be a wizard, and I desperately need there to be a DLC or a sequel because I want more.
Because now your life is empty.
Literally, like, it was all I wanted to play. Yeah, but it is fun because the only spells that get like full animations, as in separate to the regular, are the unforgivable curses. But then it is just fun, you know, using them within your regular combat and just kind of making it all your own. It's just, yeah, it's really fun. I've played through the whole thing. I actually cried. The story made me cry. Like, it was just, can recommend if you're a fan of that whole universe to play it.
There you go. That is Hogwarts Legacy, available on PS5, mm-hmm. Intolerance, Love, Struggle Throughout the Ages, wherever you can find it. Mm-hmm. We did it, Alice. We did a podcast. Woo! Congratulations. Yeah. We traveled to Italy, where the movie Roma is set, and managed to accomplish some podcasting.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Sip Pop is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. You can find out more about other shows on the network at studiodna.media or by searching Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to producer Phil for producing the show today. Thank you to Alice for hanging out. Where do you want people to find you?
Well, as always, you can find me on sifbop.com writing many articles. My most recent review that will be coming out soon, I'm sure, is a Mario movie review. So stand by for more written thoughts on that. Otherwise, I have my monthly column of One Stop Pop, so that'll be coming out soon as well, I'm sure. Yes, in fact, I think next week it should be coming out with the What is recommended based on what was most popular last month. And then I have a YouTube channel with my friend Clean Slate Reviews, where our most recent video, we did a retrospective on The Help, actually. So very interesting to kind of talk about that 10 years later and where we land, especially with the cultural climate and just the film itself. And we have others coming soon, as always.
Very cool. Appreciate you being on the show again, Alice. Hope you don't take any more European trips anytime soon so that we can get you back sooner.
No. I have no money left. It's okay.
I am thankful that you have no money. Thank you to our SIFPUP members for supporting what we do. We really do appreciate it. Go to patreon.com/SIFPUP if you want to check out all the fun there and the bonus episodes, all that kind of cool stuff. Lots of ways you can connect with us. You can leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can email us at feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie-loving friends will probably like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it and that listening is much easier than avoiding a blue shell. We will be back next week with some more movies. Haven't quite picked them yet, although I think Renfield will probably be one of them. But we'll see, and we will see you then.
Bye! Bye.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.